This is a Hipsters of the Coast podcast. This Doom Travelers podcast is brought to you by Hipsters of the Coast, your destination for magic news, strategy, and entertainment. And by Cast Haven, where you can build your magic collection like a pro. Visit casthaven.com for more information.
Welcome to another episode of Doom Travelers, the podcast where we play Destiny while talking about Magic the Gathering. Topic for this episode, of course, is going to be PAX East 2015. It was just this past weekend. Lots and lots and lots of crazy information came out about a variety of topics. Of course, Dragons of Tarkir was front and center, as that comes out in a few weeks. But they covered a wide range of things: Modern Masters, Magic Origins, Duels Origins, and of course the Q&A session. Joining me this week, as always, are Dave McNasty McCoy, and somewhere around here, there he is Matt the Obliterator Jones, and I'm Rich Alamoff-Stein, your host. So, Dave, what was the most exciting moment of the PAX East news dump for you?
Oh, man, that is a good question. I just really enjoy Doug Beyer. I think he's a great panelist, and I enjoy almost everything that he says. I don't really read his Tumblr. I probably should do that. But yeah, I really enjoy his, every time he speaks, and he just adds a depth to the story that is otherwise inaccessible.
Right.
So, and since I don't really, I think the stories are usually pretty bad, the depth that he adds makes them much better stories in my mind.
Yeah, so there's definitely a huge benefit these days, I think, to having people like Doug and the rest of the creative team who are so invested in the story, and they're able to bring that into the card game in a way that they didn't years ago. Not since the Tempest storyline. Which, you know, at that time, Mark Rosewater was writing the story, along with, I forget the name of the gentleman that he was writing it with, but he was designing the cards and writing the story. And now we're kind of back at a point where we have that level of integration again, but you have a really enthusiastic creative team. And I definitely recommend you check out Doug's Tumblr. It's called Voice for Vorthos. And Matt, what was the most exciting moment for you from the data dump that was PAX East?
Oh, man. I'm going to just admit that it was New York Armory Art Week all week, and I paid almost no attention to anything we're going to talk about other than Magic the Gathering spoiler cards that I looked up. But yeah, I actually had this thought. I was like, why would they have PAX East during Armory Week? Why would they do that?
I know,
there's probably
crazy.
Not a big overlap between video game nerds and art nerds.
You might be one of maybe a dozen people who had to choose between PAX East and New York Armory Art Week.
Yeah, I mean, I was literally at art fairs every single day, and then at a fancy dinner every single night.
That's great, though.
Except for tonight.
were you able to catch up on the spoilers from PAX East?
Yeah, I saw almost all this. Some of them I don't remember, not to be reminded of, but I'm very excited about.
What was the most excited one?
Sarkhan and Liliana are the most exciting.
Yeah, so both of those got huge reveals.
It's mostly the flip card mechanic. Sarkhan's abilities are insane, but all the idea of flip cards happening again.
Yeah.
Whoa, spoilers, Jones, spoilers.
Yeah. I love Innistrad so much. Sorry, guys, sorry.
I was there in the room. Obviously, I was live tweeting the whole thing, and the crowd response to both reveals was phenomenal.
Were they like,
yeah, I mean, of course, Doug gets very cute when talking. He's talking about Sarkon, talking about the story, talking about how Sarkon is kind of, you know, he's a different person now than he was. You know, like Dave said, really, if you haven't listened to if you didn't catch the panel, you really should check it out. You can go to Twitch and get the replay. And Doug's talking about it. And then he just, you know, the picture of Sarkon goes up on the screen. He's like, teases the audience, like, do you guys want to see more of this? And then they show the car with Liliana. But for me personally, having been there for, you know, many years now at PAX East, the reveal at the end of Battle for Zendikar, that moment is something that I think is unique to the PAX East Magic panel. It's something they did 2 years ago for the Return to Ravnica. And of course, last year they experimented a bit and they moved the announcement of for Tarkir. 3 years ago they did Return for Ravnica to Ravnica, and 2 years ago they announced Theros at PAX East, and last year they experimented a little and they moved the announcement of Tarkir block to the Pro Tour, and that didn't go over very well apparently, because they decided to go back to making the announcement at the PAX East panel. And so for those of you who aren't there, I'll kind of just walk you through this amazing experience. The panel Q&A starts to wrap up, and the Q&A was actually okay, but not the best. And a lot of people were leaving during the Q&A. I would say about half the crowd left. So at the end of the Q&A, people are starting to get out of their seats. And of course, the brand manager goes, oh, wait, we have one more thing before you go. And on the screen shows up this image, like you're on the edge of a forest looking over a cliff. And this image starts rolling up in a movie. And all of a sudden, it's floating islands and then floating hedrons, and you know where you are. You're back on Zendikar, and the words Battle for Zendikar show up, and it's, you know, everyone just kind of gets super giddy at that point. And that's a really unique experience. And that was definitely my favorite part.
I can't believe we're going back to Zendikar already.
I think everyone kind of knew we were going back to Zendikar.
But I thought all the fetches, because we needed the fetches, right, to lower the prices. But why? I thought those were all going to be in Modern Masters too.
Right. Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it's definitely... They reprinted the Shocklands and Return to Ravnica, so it seems like there's a good chance they'll reprint Fetchlands and Return to Zendikar. If you have Fetchlands now, if you still have Zendikar Fetchlands, I am not qualified to give this advice, but I would sell them.
I think it's probably too late now, isn't it?
It might already be too late.
You know, I think there's an interesting counter argument to fetches being in Zendikar, though. Like in Zendikar, so what you get from reading the blog of like Mark Rosewater is that they always have to have something to sell a set, like some key thing to sell a set. And one of the things that they used for Cons of Tarkir was a wedge set, and then
right.
And then on top of that, the fetch lands, the reveal of the fetch lands was key to like the releasing of Cons of Tarkir. And going back to Zendikar, one selling point is we're going back to Zendikar. And then you can say the second would be the Eldrazi are returning, right? And then you can...
What was that word you just said?
Sorry, Eldrazi. I never played the set. I don't know what they are.
Neither did I.
but the Eldrazi could be the other selling point. And then you could save the fetches for another set. Like, they don't necessarily have to come in Zendikar. But yeah.
No, you're right. They don't have to. But I mean, when they reprinted the fetch lands, they were pretty clear that it was a developmental decision. So development clearly wants more fetch lands available for people. But anyways, I don't want to talk too much about Zendikar, because I'm sure we're going to have plenty of time to talk about Zendikar over the next few months. But I want to talk about Dragons of Tarkir. Come on, Dragons of Tarkir comes out in, what, 2 weeks, right?
Yeah, surprisingly soon.
It's surprisingly soon. So, of course, there are going to be dragons in Dragons of Tarkir. And at the panel, they looked at a lot of them. Lots and lots and lots of dragons. There was one point where they had a slideshow that appeared to have every dragon in the set artwork presented. And that was pretty cool. You guys excited for dragons? Now that you know that the set is literally chock full of dragons?
I don't care about dragons, so I'm not excited at all.
But you care about Sarkon.
Yeah, but just him because he's so neat, and I like the story of him like getting his sanity back and things like that. But in terms of like Khans of Tarkir, after the initial excitement of Tarkir, the plane and the first set, like I've run out of gas in this. Like I'm just not interested anymore. I feel like everything feels tacked on and weird and corny, and like it's like magic feels like I'm laboring through the limited format right now, which is just a bummer. And it doesn't seem like it's going to get any better in.
I think these third sets, like these, what's it's a spring fall, or a spring third set. I think they've lately they've been having this issue where there's so much going on around the release of the third set. Like they had Modern Masters and Conspiracy that there's just so much else going on in Magic when the third set comes out that it's really hard to devote your entire attention to them. There's just too much else going on. And so I had this issue with the third set of Return to Ravnica, the Dragon's Maze, a dragon set that didn't have dragons in it. When Modern Masters came out, I just never played full block Return to Ravnica. All I did was play Modern Masters.
It's true.
So I think that's an issue that Wizards has been having with its scheduling, because we're going to have Origins, we're going to have Modern Masters at the end of May and Origins in July. And so that's a lot of excitement to expect the third set to compete with. You know, the fall set and the winter set don't have to compete with anything.
No, that's a really good point. I think it's, obviously the big draw, like you were just saying, you need something to sell the set, right? And it's clear that what they're using to sell this set is dragons. Lots and lots and lots of dragons. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It'll be maybe a challenging limited environment, because it seems like all the dragons are going to be pretty difficult to deal with. I get the idea that you're just going to have these massive dragon swarms battling each other, and that's the flavor they were going for, was this dragon-on-dragon hotness, so to say. But I think what you're going to get is maybe a lot of enfranchised players, people who are really like competitive and whatnot, might be a little upset with the format because it's going to be very Timmy driven. But casual players, I think the majority of players are going to love this set for that.
Zach Hill actually just wrote about that. I don't know if it was a Twitter post or what it was, but he said something like, it's a great time to be a casual player. And which is basically what he is at this point. And he was talking about the design of the game as it currently is with these sets. And I thought that was really interesting because I've never thought of Zach Hill as a casual player. And I also don't consider casual Magic as a real thing. Like it's not something I do. so I don't consider their concerns. But it's kind of interesting that they would spend a lot of time. I feel like those are the people who would be stoked on dragons too. Like I don't give a shit about a creature type other than Slippery Boggles beast type. Nothing else really matters to me in terms of
Definitely. I think he's spot on. It is a great time to be a casual Magic player, especially for the Timmy side of the Timmy Johnny Spike And it's actually, you know, it's a great time to be a Johnny player as well, because Modern as a format is, you know, ripe for Johnny players. So it's a pretty, and it's always a good time to be a Spike, because there's always competitive Magic.
Dave, you don't want to do another one? Let's just keep going.
Let's do one more Crucible, because I want to talk a lot about some of the specific spoilers from the panel. Now that we've kind of gotten into it, we're all excited. So let's talk about Sarkhan, the Planeswalker. So from a story perspective, we've got this new red, blue, and green Sarkhan, who's returned. He is the same Sarkhan, but different.
He's an orphan of time.
Yeah, orphan of time, the way Doug puts it so poetically. So he's a 4 loyalty planeswalker for 5 mana. He's red, blue, green, and 2 colorless. What is known as Timur, formerly known as Rug. +1, draw a card, add 1 mana of any color. -2, put a 4/4 red dragon token into play, and -8 to win the game, essentially, right?
Yeah, Dragonstorm.
He Dragonstorms, which is, but he Dragonstorms for all the dragons in your deck, which is, it's. I mean, I don't know how much more they can push the value of Doubling Season, because he come you Doubling Season Sarkhan win the game. It's going to be crazy. But so
you can also Doubling Season and then minus Sarkhan and get 2/4/4 dragons.
Sure. Or you could minus you 8 could just, him and get like 20 dragons.
Yeah. Fair enough.
it's going to fit really well in, it's obviously going to fit really well in dragon commander decks. Is there a place for this in standard?
Oh my god, I have no idea. There's already a Teemer standard deck. It's not so bad, right? I saw some guy play Savage Knuckleblade in GP today. Maybe if it's in Crater, maybe there's like a Super Friends deck that could exist with him and Kiora and some other Planeswalker that I don't know about because I don't play standard.
Yeah, what I find interesting about Sarkhan is the whole mana of any color part of it. Not only can he's not really going to ramp you very much. You're already at 5, so getting from 5 to 6 isn't that crazy. But what he's going to do is he's going to let you fix your mana pretty well. So we already have tri-lands, 5 tri-lands, just an insane amount of fixing in the format already. And then we have Sarkhan, who's going to give us even more fixing. So I'm surprised there's no 5-color decks currently, but I can definitely see there being 5-color, or at least more 4-color decks.
That's funny. I didn't even think about the mana at all. I just thought about how much better he is because he draws you a card no matter what.
Yeah.
His +1 just seems insane.
Yeah, it really does.
Like, the mana thing's interesting because I just hadn't thought about it.
Well, at 5 mana, you can actually get him out pretty quickly in a way that may make the ramp worthwhile. Because especially in EDH, if you can go from 5 to 7, going from 5 to 7 might actually be a big deal. So Sarkhan's pretty exciting. Maybe not going to see too much play in standard. Maybe will.
I would really like someone to break Sarkhan. I think that'd be really fun.
Yeah.
Because it's like we've said before, or maybe we've written many, many times, or many people have written many times, that drawing cards is the most powerful mechanic in Magic, and he just comes down and replaces himself. Even if he dies, he still replaces himself. But if he gets to do it more than one turn, that's just insane. Insane. So it seems like something that a bunch of control-y sort of bros would like to put together.
Makes sense. You know, do you think Narset, obviously Narset was, they showed Narset at the panel, but she had been spoiled earlier. Do you think Narset's going to find a space? Do you think she's a more playable planeswalker?
She costs 4 and has 6 loyalty?
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah. Jesus. Yeah, I guess that was a pretty dumb question, huh?
I don't think it's a dumb question because her rebound, like, you have to judge what spells are you going to be rebounding.
Yeah, maybe? That's true.
And I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, I think when you think of her as a reverse Domri, Right. I think that is the best way to think about her, right? She does what Domri did, except for spells and planeswalkers, basically, which seems extremely powerful, because the kind of decks that want planeswalkers are going to want to run a lot of spells and other planeswalkers as well. Whereas creature decks tended to run spells as well, which blanked some of your Domri, or more even Domri's, like Domri blanked Domri, right? But Narset doesn't blank Narset. So I think she's going to be more powerful than Domri was in the standard environment.
I agree. I think she's pretty powerful.
So, of course, there was a another planeswalker spoiled this weekend at PAX. This one was probably even more exciting than Sarkhan. And that, of course, was the new Liliana.
Oh, my God. So exciting.
So this was something I have to admit. When people first started speculating that this was going to happen, I was incredibly skeptical. People said that, you know, this makes the most sense. It's going to be story driven. People are, you know, this is what's going to happen. And I said, no, it's not going to happen. So here I am. I was wrong.
what a good man you are for being able to admit.
The five planeswalkers in Magic Origins are going to be legendary creatures that flip and become planeswalkers. Using the double-sided mechanic from Innistrad, this is Ethan Fleischer is claiming responsibility for this. And at this point, I don't think anybody really cares who takes the responsibility. It's, you know, it's what everyone expected to happen.
In a perfect world, yeah, everybody expected that would happen.
Yeah, and the naysayers, like myself, were convinced that it would be too expensive, it would not be, they wouldn't be able to implement it properly, it would create problems for the limited environment, but Wizards went ahead and they said, this is the expectation, and anytime you can design something to the player expectation, you pretty much have to, so...
Can I just say how amazing Wizards has gotten at fusing story and cards?
Yeah, they are really good at that.
It's just insane to me how well this mechanic tells the story that they're trying to tell. Because flavor and card design as separate activities are really, really difficult. And to combine them to such an amazing extent just blows my mind. I'm just so impressed.
It's perfect. It's also crazy to use something like the werewolf flip and have it be a different type of flip, and it still makes sense.
Yeah, it's a huge. It helps the story team. It helps the. It helps the game. So. But so Liliana is exciting. There's no doubt about that. So it'll be very exciting. I think everyone at this point is hoping for another broken version of Jace.
I mean, you gotta have Jace, right?
It'll be there. We will learn why Jace doesn't even remember his own past.
Probably because it was a forgettable story. If I had to guess.
It very well could have been a forgettable story. I see what you did there. and the other three we'll be getting are Gideon, right? Gideon and Nyssa and Chandra, of course. And, this is exciting for two reasons. Obviously, the Planeswalker cards are going to be exciting on their own. And also, Doug Byer and folks, they've talked about the reason these five Planeswalkers were chosen is because these are the Planeswalkers who are going to be featured in stories over the next few blocks.
Meaning Zendikar and all.
Right. So obviously, with return to Zendikar now, we'll get the continuation of Nyssa Rivain's story, which for sure is going to have something to do with the Eldrazi. So that's going to be exciting. And but we're going to get to see stories from Gideon, and we're going to get to see stories of Chandra and Jace, of course, and and Liliana. So Jace, of course, means very likely a return to Ravnica. But you know, it ties in again, like we were just saying, the tie-in between the cards and the game is becoming no longer something that they just kind of have side by side and hey, let's put these things together. But now it's a real let's, you know, think about these things as one entity. We're not putting together the game and the story. We are making a game about a story. And that's, I think, a huge shift that has made everyone's experience better from playing the game to designing the game and whatnot. So it'll be good to see this trend continue. I'm looking forward to seeing stories about Gideon. Gideon is a planeswalker we haven't seen too much from. You know, he was in Theros, but the story really revolved around Elspeth, so we didn't get too much. But
and of course, he was in Theros.
Yeah, it's where he's from.
He really was, yeah.
He is from Theros. That is his homeworld.
Apparently, he's referenced in some flavor text too, and they did a good job of changing his name so that it sounded Greek, but when it was anglicized, it would have been anglicized to Gideon Jura. So they did a good job of like hiding him with a true to life Greek trappings. You know, like if a real Greek person had gone through this transition from their Greek name to like an Americanized version of their name, they would have gone through a similar transition. So I thought that was pretty sweet.
That's kind of smart.
Yeah.
It's very exciting to see those sort of details getting a lot of consideration these days.
I still hate Gideon though.
He does seem pretty flavorless, like just yeah. You know, your standard white
He's
hero,
the vanilla.
Well, hopefully they can improve upon that. So last thing, last bit of spoiler news to talk about from PAX. Before we wrap up, is Modern Masters 2015 edition. I just got killed. Modern Masters 2015 edition. So only two spoilers from this set, obviously a set of all reprints, but confirmation of everyone's favorite green creature returning and everyone's favorite colorless planeswalker will also be coming back. Tarmogoyf and Karn return to Modern Masters. You guys excited?
Yes.
Yes.
I think Modern Masters did a very good job of, and we talked about this in a previous episode, of remixing old Magic sets into a new one. And I think Modern Masters was like the premier example of that. They did a very good job of taking old draft formats and remixing them into new draft formats, and it was a lot of people's favorite draft format in a long time. And I think Modern Masters might disappoint people in not being super different from the original Modern Masters in terms of a limited environment. I think it's entirely possible that there's some overlap and more than people would want. But man, I can't wait to play with cards I never had a chance to play with in limited.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. You know, at $10 a pack, I think people are expecting more of these sorts of cards. so it's good to get confirmation right off the bat that two of the major powerhouse cards of the format are going to be included as mythics. I'm sure we'll see plenty more Modern Masters spoilers over the next few weeks.
I think Wizards had a really nasty surprise when they reprinted Tarmogoyf and the price went up. I think that really showed them how much they needed to print of an in-demand card in order to affect its price.
So. I don't fault them at all for how this has gone. I think it's the first time, you know, starting with Modern Masters, we're seeing the first time Wizards has started to take the position that the price of cards in the secondary market is something they need to start doing a better job of regulating. And the only means they have to do that is through reprints. And they've now done, they have two routes to do that. They have supplemental sets like Modern Masters, and then they have expansions like, putting the Shocklands back and bringing the Onslaught fetches in. And, it's been an ongoing experiment for them. And of course, it's difficult because they design 2 years in advance for expansions and about a year in advance for supplemental products. So they don't, they have to wait quite some time to see the reap the rewards. So I think we're going to start seeing now that they have a better understanding of the impact of these sort of products. And we're going to, hopefully this time we'll see the price of Tarmogoyf come down slightly.
Man, I bet it doesn't happen.
I think they're probably going to print a lot more Modern Masters 2 than they did Modern Masters. So I think it's entirely possible that it drops.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know if you guys saw, Corbin Hostler wrote a quick piece. I'll close on this before we wrap up this episode. He wrote a piece recently for Quiet Speculation talking about how a lot of distributors are still sitting on boxes of Modern Masters.
And that just bought a box.
And
Saturday.
What's happened is they were hoarding them, and they use them as ways to get stores to buy product that they have difficulty moving. And one of the reasons why Modern Masters 2015 has such a high retail price is Wizards didn't want distributors to be sitting on it the way that they're sitting on boxes of the original Modern Masters. They product.
They're selling it to the distributors at a higher price than normal?
Yeah, because the MSRP is higher, the price that the distributors have to pay is higher because that's based on the MSRP. So, when the packs were $8, the MSRP was twice as much as a regular box. So the distributors were paying twice as much as they would for a regular expansion. Now they're going to be paying, 2.5 times as much. So they're hoping that that will force the distributors to move more product because they'll be making less, getting less of an overhead on it. There is a lot more Modern Masters product out there, from the original Modern Masters. It was just never moved. So hopefully there'll be less of that problem this time around. So yeah, exciting stuff. Dragons of Tarkir comes out in 2 weeks. Modern Masters will be out in May, which is only 2 months away. So 2.5 months until Modern Masters comes out. And then, 2 months after that will be Magic Origins and Double Face Planeswalkers, and that'll take us to July. And to bring us all the way around July, August, September, 2 months after that, the battle for Zendikar begins. So look forward to that. So it's going to be an exciting year for Magic, and we're looking forward to it, and I will stop rambling as soon as we're using Skype now. So how do I turn? How do I get off the Skype thing?
Oh, you just hit the red,
the red. Okay, thanks, guys.
Just turn it all off.
Hey,
Hey, Guardians. Thanks for tuning in to the Doom Travelers podcast. You can find more at doomtravelers.com or follow at Doom Travelers on Twitter for show updates and other nonsense. Make sure to subscribe to Hipsters TV on YouTube for videos of our previous episodes. And don't forget that you can find audio-only versions of the Doom Travelers podcast on iTunes. For your host, Rich Stein, and Matt the Obliterator Jones, I'm David Bones McCoy. See you next time. Nothing past William Howard Tuck.